Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to Arizona Good Business Radio, featuring leaders in the Arizona business community working to build a lasting impact throughout our state through doing good business. And I'm your host, Thomas Barr, Executive Director of Local First Arizona. We're a statewide organization who advocates for and celebrates locally owned businesses, and we're the largest local business coalition in the country. We provide resources to over 3,000 small businesses and raise awareness of the benefits of building a strong local economy. So we're really excited to have a great set of partners here today, legacy partners of Local First and great people. I'm excited to introduce Liz Barker Alvarez, from the Chief Policy Advisor for First Things First, as well as Kelly McCready, whose family owns a series of family learning centers and childhood facilities in Arizona, child care centers. She's the administrator and controller as part of that project. So welcome, Liz, and welcome, Kelly, to the show today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Before we get started, I really actually want to give everybody the opportunity to hear from you, who you are and who it is, what you do. So before we dig into any questions today, Liz, I'd love if you could introduce yourself to our audience.
Hi, yes, I'm Liz Barker Alvarez, and I'm the Chief Policy Advisor for First Things First, which is a statewide organization created by voters to expand or enhance programs for kids birth to 5 years old so that when they get to kindergarten, they are prepared for success not only in school, but beyond.
Fantastic. Fantastic. And Kelly, would you mind introducing yourself?
My name is Kelly McCready. I am the administrator for Valley Learning Center and Creative Campus Learning Center, which means I support the teachers and the families in providing a high quality early learning experience for children.
Fantastic. Well, thank you both for being here today. Liz, because you personally actually represent First Things First, I was wondering if you might, for our listeners, tell us a little bit about the organization, give us a little brief history of First Things First and what you do.
Yes. So as I mentioned, First Things First was created actually in 2006. So we're a fairly new organization when you think of state agencies. And we're funded through tobacco revenue. We expand programs for kids birth to 5 years old. And in three major areas, we expand programs that improve the quality of early learning and access to early learning, which is what we're going to talk about today. But we also fund programs that strengthen families in their role as their child's first teachers and expand access to preventive health like developmental screenings so we can find out if there's maybe a potential learning problem that can be addressed early on. The specific programs that we fund in different communities statewide are informed by local councils comprised of community leaders who volunteer to do that. And they study the needs of their community and recommend to our statewide board what kids in their area need in order to be ready for school.
Fantastic. And so how long has First Things First been around?
Well, we were approved by voters in 2006, but in terms of actually implementing programs, since about 2009.
Got it. Okay. So it's actually somewhat of a newer initiative for Arizona.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And really complementing the work that is done by a lot of different organizations. So we partner with the Arizona Department of Education and private providers like Kelly's, as well as philanthropic organizations and business organizations, because really the job of getting kids ready for school is that's a responsibility we all share. So we do our part and other folks do their part as well.
Sure. Fantastic. I love how you tied or connected the dots between all of those really important areas of childcare. Kelly, I'd love to hear from you, from your personal hands-on experience in being a part of that collective of people that care for our children. What has the experience been like for you? How long has your family been involved in operating these centers? And how do you interact with First Things First?
My great aunt started one of the first childcare centers in Arizona back in the 50s. My mom now owns that center. It's still fully operational to this day. With First Things First, I got involved when it was just a little proposition. I worked on the campaign in Yavapai County. And it was, as it's evolved, it's helped bridge and connect and form a web for early childhood before that, it was almost as if we were in silos. We would have to go to one agency for a certain kind of support, another agency for a certain kind of support. And as a business, when each agency had different needs and requirements, it was very difficult. First Things First has been crucial in giving early childhood the ability to thrive and improve the outcomes for young children.
Sure, sure. And so how many centers or childcare facilities is your family operating now?
We have four. We have two in Central Phoenix and we have two in Yavapai County.
Great, great. That's fantastic. Well, thanks for all that you do. Liz, I wanted to bounce back to you really quickly and ask, you know, we know the importance of child care. I think everybody would elevate that as a top priority as a community issue, is making sure our children are taken care of. How does that really relate to the connection between early childhood care, developing our children into the workforce? Is there a strong connection there? And how does First Things First prioritize making sure that there's a connection?
Sure. So one of the things that First Things First does is actually try to build awareness of early childhood as the beginning of the education continuum. So I think that obviously business is very well aware how important it is to have educated individuals. It's important that our kids be strong readers. It's important that they graduate from high school, that they matriculate in some kind of post-secondary education so that they can be ready to enter the workforce, so that they can be productive citizens. But one of the aspects that kind of gets lost sometimes in the conversation is that learning begins at birth. And a lot of those crucial connections, some of the skills that are really important to be a good work, to be a good employee, actually start to form when children are between birth and 5 years old. And if children have learning gaps when they are very young, when they get to school, those learning gaps typically just become larger. They don't decrease. So it's really important, if we want our children to be successful in school and then later on as adults in business, it's really important that we give them that strong start. So everything that First Things First does is really to give families options when it comes to giving their children that strong start. So if they want and need an early learning environment for their children, we want to make sure it's of high quality and we want to make sure that families can afford it. But if families want, they stay home with their children, that's wonderful. Then we want those parents to feel like they can provide a quality early learning experience for their children. And of course, we want to make sure that if there are any kind of developmental issues or delays, that those are identified so that children can get help sooner and then not arrive at school already behind. Wonderful. So that's really that. Yeah, that's really that connection to the future workforce. And then, of course, it's heavily connected to the workforce of today as well.
That makes so much sense. And Kelly, as someone who, hands-on provides care to a lot of children or your facilities do, I feel like, there's this major difference in perception that people might have between babysitting, right? And really caring for children. I obviously everybody's listening to this as audio, but I see the smile on your face as we're connecting on video today. And I'm sure it happens all too often that is just something that people think is being done when they maybe call you to have their child attend your facility, but really it's much more than that. So can you talk to us a little bit about that?
That's been a misconceived notion that we've had to dispel over decades. Hmm. We're teaching children how to learn. The basis, it's scientifically proven that the basis of all learning is a secure relationship. So we're teaching children how to learn so that they can learn when they get to the K-12 system. We don't teach firemen how to put out a fire, but we teach them how to be brave when they're scared. We don't teach nurses how to care for sick patients, but we teach them how to work hard and long. So we're teaching children how to learn. The babysitting aspect, the science is now behind us so that we have scientific data to prove that we're not babysitting. We're busy and doing such crucial work in order to ensure the success of our of our state in the future, not just today, but in 20 years. That's what I'm doing today, is ensuring Arizona's future.
Well, thank you for sharing that. That's quite profound and really powerful. Why do you think that it is that early learning in childhood it doesn't get as much attention that maybe a K through 12 learning does get? Is there a reason for that?
Again, decades of scientific data that the education system has been able to produce, where we're still trying to weave that web. And first things first, has been crucial in being able to compile that data and present it where it needs to be presented to show the impact of what it is we do on a daily basis. We can't have an 18-month-old complete a standardized test that can go into a batch of data. But the things that are happening on a daily basis are just an explosion of learning and discovery that it's just sometimes hard to put on paper.
Sure. That makes a lot of sense. Liz, kind of back to you a little bit. You had touched on before, there's a lot of obviously different scenarios. Some parents are able to stay home with their kids, but there's many different scenarios that families have. What does First Things First do to kind of try to fill in the gap and assist with maybe those families that might not be able to naturally afford to pay for childcare or anything like that? How does First Things First come in and play a role there?
Well, I think that one of the things is that a lot of people aren't really aware of just how expensive quality childcare can be. In the state of Arizona, quality childcare for an infant can cost as much as tuition at one of our state universities.
Wow.
And for families with very young children, if you have more than one child, even if you have one child, that can be very, very difficult to afford. And quality does matter. It matters in everything. And obviously it matters in early education. So in terms of early education, two things. One, First Things First invests in partnering with providers to improve the quality of the programs they provide, right? Not just quality care, but quality education. Mm-hmm. So we support providers in their efforts to promote quality. And then the other thing that we do is quality first scholarships. So we invest over $40 million a year to help more low-income families in our community afford that quality care for their children.
Wow. That is huge. Do you have numbers on the number of families that you're able to assist each year? Or I guess even stepping back, how many childcare facilities do we have in Arizona that you're working with?
So there are about roughly 2,800 childcare Wow. providers throughout Arizona, and about 1,100 of them were able to serve through Quality First. And when we first started the Quality First program, the effort to improve quality, about 23% of those 1,100 providers were able to meet or exceed the quality standards. And just this past year, we got to 79% of providers meeting or exceeding the quality standards. So we know that it works. Part of our work with business, with philanthropy, with policymakers, is to try to see how can we leverage some more resources to try to bring that to more providers statewide.
Sure. Well, wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. My next question is kind of for both of you from maybe a different perspective that you might have. And, you know, elephant in the room, we are 10 months into this global pandemic. We know that every industry has been impacted, but I mean, I'm sure absolutely heavily our childcare facilities have been impacted by this and had to change and uplift all the ways that you operate for safety and well-being of those that you serve. So maybe from both of your perspectives, how has COVID really just disrupted the childcare industry, and how are you dealing, and how is the industry dealing with things right now?
Well, I can talk a little bit about it from the global perspective. From the global perspective, really, COVID has exacerbated longstanding issues that existed with childcare. So in a 2018 study, for example, half of Arizonans lived in what's called a childcare desert, meaning there was no childcare in their census area or there were three children that needed childcare for every slot that was available. So half of Arizona was in that situation already. And then childcare was difficult to afford. obviously, we just talked about that. So COVID has only made it more difficult. In the summer, when the pandemic was first getting started and at the height of it, our work with our Quality First centers and other partners showed that about half the childcare centers in Arizona were closed. And through a variety of different assistance programs, through the governor's office, through federal funding, through state agencies like the Department of Economic Security and First Things First, as well as community partners, now we're up to about two-thirds of providers are open. But given the new safety guidelines around group sizes, et cetera, as well as what's required to be safe in those environments, really they're only able to serve about 40% of the children that they served before. We also have some data regarding costs. So you were mentioning, you know, I mean, childcare providers already had pretty high overhead and were operating on razor thin margins to begin with. And the COVID just made that so much worse. Nationally, they estimated that the operating costs for childcare increased about 47% because of COVID. And in Arizona, the data is like it's much higher. The operating costs for a center like the ones that Kelly runs increased about 84%. And for childcare environments based in homes, so folks who care for just a few children in their homes, their costs went up 75%. So it's just been this this storm of you have families who maybe don't feel safe taking their children to childcare, you have, and then you have this explosion in operating costs. And it's just really had a quite detrimental impact on the childcare community. But Kelly, you're actually in a center. Can you talk a little bit about what's going on with your environments?
Early on, our issue was crucial supplies and supply chains. There were three or four times where I would spend a day or two sourcing baby formula, diaper wipes, hand soap, sanitizer. We were grateful then First Things First and some of their partners were able to access us some supplies. It was super silly, but our Quality First coach drove from Phoenix on a Saturday to Prescott Valley to deliver us two cases of toilet paper.
Wow.
It's a thing. It was cordless toilet paper. What do I do with... I could not, it was $100 to buy a cordless dispenser.
Wow.
So I got me a little stick for $12.98 on Amazon and I installed them in a couple of bathrooms and we moved on. So that being able to be flexible and react immediately. This week, like you said, we're 10 months into this. This week, I have been to Phoenix three times. I've closed one school. The next morning, I opened another school. I drove back to Prescott Valley, gave the director a lunch break because she's short on staff, and then went and closed another school. My staff is stretched super thin, and I'm doing everything I can to be there and let them know, like, we're in this together. Whether it's a Starbucks run or a box of crumble cookies, or I'm here with you. We are, it's day by day.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you, Kelly, for everything that you do. Absolutely. It's so important. And I don't think we can't forget, you know, how stretched people like yourself are in these times. So thank you so much for sharing. Another thing that I wanted to ask about was, you know, we've heard a lot about federal and state COVID relief efforts and additional funding that's been made available and things like that. Has there been support, whether that's through a PPE equipment that you've needed or funding needed to be made available for your facilities? What does that look like?
We have accessed all the temporary supports that we've been able to get our hands on, whether it is two cases of toilet paper or a PPP or emergency grants and emergency funding. And they're temporary. So we were stretched pretty thin before. And then we access those and utilize them, and then they're gone. And we're still stretched thin and we're getting by.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, they've been there, but they're not a permanent support. It's not permanent funding for the industry.
Sure. Okay. And Liz, from a broader perspective, what is yours on that?
Yeah, so there, through the Federal CARES Act, Arizona did receive some funding, and Governor Ducey, in collaboration with the Arizona Department of Economic Security and community partners like First Things First, really moved to implement some relief for the childcare industry. The first was the formation of enrichment centers to provide childcare for the essential workforce, and about 600 providers statewide were able to get involved with that program and were able to stay afloat because they were providing care to the essential workforce and getting reimbursed for that. And then after the enrichment center program ended, through again that funding, the governor created a grant program through DES, and about 1,200, I think it was, 1,200 providers access, I'm sorry, 1,800 providers access grants through DES, again for 3 or 4 months. To help keep them afloat. And then just recently in December, there was another round of funding that was provided. DES is working right now with the governor's office on how that might also help childcare providers. But to Kelly's point, a lot of these issues with childcare, with the availability of childcare, the affordability of childcare, are some longstanding issues. So really one of the hopes we have is that we can, yes, absolutely leverage this funding to provide that short-term relief, but to really elevate the conversation about needing to create really some long-term fixes for this industry that is such a critical, really two-generation approach to economic development. Because in the same way that sometimes people aren't aware of how crucial early learning is in terms of supporting education for tomorrow's workforce, I don't think that a lot of people are quite as aware of how crucial the childcare infrastructure is to today's economic development. So whether you're talking about people even being able to go out and find a job, whether you're talking about staff retention, individual employee productivity, or even whether people are able to finish a degree or how long it takes them to finish a degree, childcare is that crucial support that really helps people to do that. So when business really thinks about business, can't just think of childcare as, oh, they are also businesses, because they are. Childcare is the business that keeps all the other business running, because this is where children are being cared for and are being learned and are learning so their parents can work.
Sure, absolutely. And especially thinking through all of our first responders, frontline workers who have not been able to work at home through this pandemic. To your point, from before, our firefighters, our nurses, our all of these people who have jobs need the support of the system to care for children, to be able to provide those resources through these times and at all times, right? So I love that you connected the dots, Liz, between childcare as this, you know, thing over here on the side and how it's really got its tentacles within our economy, right? And how it operates. So, you know, we have a lot of businesses and business owners and people involved in economic development that listen to our show. What can the business community do to contribute to a healthier, more fluid or vibrant childcare structure in Arizona? Are there certain things that they can be thinking about or implementing as policies for their staff to make things work better for them or for the system as a whole? Does anything come to mind?
Well, sure. It all really starts with awareness. So a couple of things. Individual businesses can now, if they understand now that childcare is so important to them, they really should look at how is the lack of availability of childcare impacting their workforce. Have they talked to their workforce about childcare arrangements and how is that impacting people's ability to stay with them, to be productive, et cetera? You mentioned a lot of people who are not able to work from home. I'm not sure people realize how hard it is to work from home when you have an infant, a toddler, or a preschooler in your house. And at the same time, you're trying to support their learning and, you know, keep them out of the things that naturally young children get into. So it's actually a crucial support even for people working from home. And I think that really taking the time in your own business, in your own industry, to look at how is the lack of childcare impacting all of that, whether you're able to find employees, retain employees, how productive they are, et cetera, really take a look at that. And then if you find, and I think a lot of businesses will find that childcare is impacting their business a lot, there are a lot of things that businesses can do in terms of work schedules, in terms of wages, in terms of some of the benefits that are offered. You know, there are sometimes tax benefits to offering subsidies or on-site childcare for employees, as you know, fits through supports that can be provided that then have tax benefits for the employer individual businesses. Now, as a collective, as industry, help to build awareness among other business leaders of how crucial childcare is, then leverage that awareness to the major industry groups like the chambers of commerce, et cetera, who really do work a lot with policymakers, et cetera, so that childcare becomes one of those issues that is talked about as a crucial business infrastructure that needs to be fixed and supported. You know, if the I-10 in Phoenix broke down, if half the lanes sunk, let's say, there would be no question that we need to rush in as policymakers, as business, as industry groups, and we need to get in there and get that fixed because it really is a crucial infrastructure to business. Childcare is the same way. It's just not as visible as the I-10.
Sure. Yeah. I wish it was more visible than the I-10. I'll tell you that much. Well, thank you both so much for sharing your experience and your knowledge and expertise with our audience today. We're super grateful for the work that you do as a provider, Kelly, and as an organization, Liz, and for sharing that with our audience who usually doesn't get to talk about these types of things. And I think it's really important. So we really appreciate both of you being on the show today. Are there any last thoughts you'd like to share with our audience?
From my perspective, just hoping that people help us to spread the word of childcare as a two-generation approach to effective economic development. Just get involved, help spread the word. This is something that's going to benefit your business today, and it's going to make a big difference also in the future. And how many things can you really say that about?
Great, great. And Kelly, anything from you?
Absolutely. Because when business leaders start asking questions, people start taking notice. That's the support we need.
Great, great. Well, we hope that we can help elevate that voice today. So thank you both so much. We hope you listening were inspired today, listening to these leaders working to leave a legacy and impact in Arizona through doing great business. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Phoenix Business Radio X, for hosting and all of our legacy partners, including First Things First. And this is Thomas Barr from Local First Arizona, reminding you that if we want to build a better Arizona, we need to connect deeply with the local businesses that make us proud to call this place our home.